This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Good evening and welcome. You're listening to Well here on Joy 94.9. My name is Tex and I'm joined this week by my co-host Adam. First off this evening, thanks to Daniel and the team from Outtakes. What are you saying, doll? Good evening, Adam.
How are you? Pretty good. Surprisingly, it is a little bit cold, which is very annoying.
Yeah, well, it was particularly lovely today.
Well, no, it's cold this evening. Like this morning, it was beautiful, but gorgeous. It's just kind of, let's just say I was not appropriately dressed for the occasion, and now it's made the day really crappy. But besides that, I'm fabulous.
You'll be right, Adam. Now, Adam, last week on the show, they were talking, the hosts that were on last week were talking about the AFL Pride game, which happened on Saturday night. Now, you were there. What was it like?
I was there. It was actually really good. Really, really good. We got a lot more engagement than we expected to. People were coming up to us and sort of asking us what it is that we do, and we were giving out rainbow ribbons for free just to raise awareness. Doing kind of everything that we sort of needed to do, but I'm not quite sure whether it's the people who were kind of more inclined to engage with us and then the homophobes were off to the other side or something like that, but everybody seemed to have a really good time. There's face painting going on. Joy was there. We were there. Galfa was there. So, and we had people going around with sort of cutouts and getting photos taken. Everyone's really excited about that.
I saw some of those on Facebook.
And they sold out of the merchandise by half time.
Oh, wow.
Before half time. So, and everybody was really getting into it. So, it was great to see.
That's
so,
fantastic.
Hopefully, it's a tradition that they keep sort of building on because I think we'd love to be back and do it again.
I might even go next year, doll. I've never been to the football.
Out bloody rages.
Now, Adam, what's the show Well all about?
Well, here on Well, Tex.
Yes.
We discuss sex, sexual health, and basically overall health and well-being of our gender, sex, and sexually diverse community. But specifically tonight.
Yes.
What are we going to be chatting about?
Well, tonight on the show, we're going to chat. We have two lovely guests who will be joining us in the
Pray
studio.
Pray tell, who are they?
Oh, well. One of them is Joel Murray, and he's from Living Positive Victoria's Positive Speaking Bureau. Positive, I knew I'd get it wrong. Positive Speakers Bureau. And we've also got one of our colleagues from VAC, the policy guru, John Manwaring. And we're going to be talking about Hep C and HIV co-infection and a forum that's coming up in September.
Well, on Joy 94.9.
This is Well here on Joy 94.9. And would you believe it, Adam? We have had a message in already. And we didn't even say send us a SMS. 1300 JOY 949. Send us an email onair@joy.org.au. They come to us right here in the studio. But Tristan has sent us a message saying, "Hi guys, just wanted to say my partner and I were at the football on Saturday. It was nice to be able to hold hands at the football. It was great to see all the people having a rainbow flag, waving about. And my partner Chris went for St Kilda and he went for the Swans. So Tristan, you would have been happy because I think, even though I don't follow football, I'm pretty certain that the Sydney Swans won.
They absolutely smashed them.
Oh, sensational. Joining us this evening are our guests, who are both no strangers here to Well. Joel Murray from Living Positive Victoria's Positive Speakers Bureau and VAC Policy Officer John Manwaring. Good evening to you both.
Hello.
Howdy.
Now, Joel, perhaps if we could start with you. How about just a little bit about yourself and about Living Positive Victoria's Positive Speakers Bureau?
Yeah, well, I'm a gay man. I'm 32 years old. I've been living with HIV and Hep C since 2010. Mm-hmm. The Positive Speakers Bureau is a program of Living Positive Victoria. Living Positive Victoria is an advocacy agency for all people living with HIV.
Yep.
And people like me get trained to be speakers at the Speakers Bureau, and we go out into various settings, schools, community groups, at VAC.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell our personal story in order to, bring awareness to people, and it just helps not make it so, you know, brings education to life, not so much stuck in the textbooks, but that real life experience.
And how do you find the general reception to be? Are there some sort of audiences, as you said, you go to schools or you go to community groups and whatnot, do you find some to be sort of more on the edge, afraid to ask a question, or more other people, sort of groups going, tell us more, this is really interesting and, really engaging? Because as you said, you're not reading a textbook, you're getting someone's personal story.
Yeah, look, one thing I've learnt is that what I expect of them never happens. So I've had some school groups where I'm like, oh, there's a lot of sort of sport jocks here, and I don't know how they're going to go, these, 15, 16-year-old boys. And and then they'll prove me wrong and they'll be the ones right up the front with the eyes fixed and really listening to the story. So it really depends.
Mixed bag.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's a bit confronting because people are like deadpan to you. But then if you're talking for 40 minutes, I myself don't have a good poker face. So you've just got to kind of go, it's not actually, they're not reacting to you. It's just the fact that they've been sitting for 40 minutes listening.
And, John, I guess, what can you share with the listener about you and the work that you do at VAC as the Senior Policy Analyst?
I do the most exciting work one can possibly imagine. I do research and writing and reports. It's like school that never ends. But really, that's what I do. I research the topic of the day. A lot of it's been, lately it's been prep, because that's occupying everybody's attention right now. But I just kind of help the organization decide, okay, what do we need to do and why do we need to do it? Do we have a sound evidence base to do it? And are we responding to our community's needs? And, maybe we spot something that isn't being done and needs to be done. So I try and find all the reasons and all the research that says, yes, this is what we can do. This is the best path for us. And this is why. And then we can try and convince people to do that. So hopefully somewhat effective in it anyway.
And who determines the topic? Is it sort of through community dialogue, or is it informal feedback, or is it something that is a potential issue that we need to address that before it becomes something bigger?
All of the above.
Well, thanks for that. Answer for you then, shall I?
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate it. Sometimes it comes from an employee. They just say, hey, we've been hearing this from, Text does Backreach, which is a wonderful outreach program at sex on premises venues. And we hear these interesting concerns that people have. It's like, oh, that's a thing we haven't really thought of, and maybe we need to pursue that. And so, sometimes it's dead ends and it's nothing we can really do anything about, but I'll do the research and I'll see if that works. Another thing, it might be the state government has said to, for example, all the hospitals and healthcare networks, they say, you need to do right by LGBTI people and you need to tell us why. And we were kind of caught off guard with that. We're like, oh, crap. We need to have something in place. So it's like responding to that thing. Like, all right, this is what we want to tell the hospitals because these are the priorities for our community and we need to make sure that they're responsive and responsive to the state as well as to our community. So all over the map. It's great fun.
Now, Joel, can you share with us and our listener perhaps a little about your journey with HIV and Hep C, and then perhaps to go on a bit for the treatment that you've recently had for Hep C?
So back in 2010, I got HIV, and it was not really that big a surprise because I was having lots of risky sexual activity. And my HIV was going along pretty well. I was seeing my doctor, I was coming to terms with my diagnosis, I was getting my confidence back, and then I got called in to see the nurse about an abnormal liver result, and it was there that they told me you have Hep C, and it kind of blew me away because I didn't really expect that. I didn't think that I was at risk of getting Hep C because the little I knew about it was that you could get it from sharing injecting equipment. But that wasn't something I was doing at that time. So I was just sort of, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I contacted you know, I contacted VAC and Living Positive Victoria and Hepatitis Victoria, and I was sort of like, well, you know, why didn't someone tell us? What, where was that, you know, that social media, you know, message? Or why haven't we seen posters on the back of toilet doors at sex on premises venues, for example? And the answer was that, you know, they, it was not on anyone's radar, really. And so there were a whole heap, there was a small cohort of all HIV positive men who got Hep C through a sexual transmission,
right?
And it, for from a clinical perspective, that was the first time that there was sort of evidence around transmission through sex between HIV positive men. So I mean, my doctor at the time, my doctor put me on what was then a 12-month long treatment of pegylated interferon and ribavirin. It was pretty nasty treatment, and I only lasted 6 months before I was so physically my mental health was so bad that the doctor was like, we've got to take you off this. And because I didn't finish the treatment, unfortunately I didn't clear Hep C. So really I've just been waiting and waiting all these years. There was some new research that came out of America, and that was saying, oh, you know, there's these great new drugs and they're really highly effective and they've got no side effects or little side effects. And so we've just been playing, I just played the waiting game here in Australia and helped Hepatitis Victoria advocate and sort of lobby the government to trying to get these drugs approved. So, I mean, I got onto the new treatment as soon... We got a... Sorry, there was a funding announcement at the end of last year that the government was going to put $1 billion into this, and that the drugs were going to be available from the 1st of March. So I got my drugs on the 2nd of March, and it was just one pill a day for 12 weeks, and there was not very many side effects. And, yeah, so I finished treatment now.
Yeah.
And my first test result, which was immediately after treatment, says... that hepatitis wasn't detected.
Right.
Yep. And I've got one more test to go, and that's at the end of this month. And hopefully that will, I'm pretty sure that will be all clear as well. So that'll be no more Hep C for me.
Which is really fantastic news, and congratulations.
Thank you.
That's really fantastic. We're going to play some wonderful community service announcements, but listeners, stay there because we will be returning very soon and we'll be sharing a little bit of John's story and then talking about the forum that's coming up to deal with HIV and Hep C co-infection.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we are chatting with Joel Murray and John Mainwaring. So you're both presenting at the HIV and Hep C co-infection forum coming up in August. But before we sort of get into that, sorry, it's happening in September, is it, Tex? That's great information for you to have noted down there.
But I was hoping people would ignore that so I could correct it later without too much reference, but you know, kudos to you for bringing it back.
But, John, I guess, can you share a little bit about your journey with HIV?
Oh, my journey. I love that word.
Your journey.
My journey.
Was that your Aussie accent?
It's probably a terrible Aussie accent. Yeah, God, it's been 10 years now, over 10 years. I was diagnosed in January 2006 when I was 22 years old, wee lad. And I got it the good old-fashioned way with sex without any sort of condom or anything like that. And it was, you know, it's. I think we tend to think of these things in isolation, but I think of HIV in respect to my life began far earlier than the day I actually seroconverted, the day I got my test result, because it was this kind of, to my mind, inevitable product of, I hate to say the path I had chosen, but rather the path I was on. And this isn't meant to be a moralistic sort of thing, but I just had many life experiences as a child, you know, including abuse and neglect and things like that. And so it creates certain feelings within a person and a certain belief about who one is and where one fits in the world and what one is worth in that respect. And so I think I started engaging in a lot of behaviors, not necessarily because they were doing anything for me, but because I didn't really care about myself or what I was doing or think about the consequences of it so much. They were there floating in the ether, but, you know, not in the sense that there was any immediacy or any need to treat myself well. So after that, 10 years on, I think I feel much better about myself. And I think moving to Australia is a big part of that, because there is such a strong community here in VAC, in Living Positive Victoria, in the people I've met through these organizations who are just wonderful examples. And also the fact that I don't have to worry about treatment here. Where in the U.S. it was this, it was terrifying to think what happens if I have to go on treatment, because I can't afford it. I don't have any health insurance. You know, I might get on the 10,000 person long waiting list for treatment subsidies, but that's 10,000 people ahead of me. That sort of thing. And now, to be able to go into the pharmacy and, you know, they give me 6 month supply. Say you're healthy, you're undetectable, and it's a single little green pill a day that I take. I it sounds hokey, but I have to hold back tears every time, because there's still like trauma and stress left over from that worry, that, you know, more than five years of worry behind what that meant. So that's where I'm at now.
Thank you, John. That's great.
And so I guess sort of getting back to HIV and Hep C, and sort of, Joel, what you were talking about, the fact that you contracted Hep C but thought that you weren't necessarily at risk of it from the behaviours you were engaging in, you weren't sharing injecting equipment or whatnot. So do you want to speak just a little bit to how HIV is transmitted, how Hep C is transmitted, and kind of in a sexual context, because we know that it can be sexually transmitted, but how exactly?
Yeah, so with Hep C, it's a bloodborne virus, so it is blood-to-blood contact. So if we're talking about sex, we're talking about that there has to be some sort of damage or tear on the inside of the anus, maybe also on the penis, but it could also be... depends on what activities you're doing. So, for example, if you two men were sharing a toy, then that's one way that it could be transmitted. Or if you were sharing the same sex partner and not either changing condoms, or if you were having condomless sex, not sort of rinsing afterwards or in between changing partners, there are two ways you can get it. Also, maybe. If you're doing any sort of extreme anal play with maybe fisting, that could be one way you might get it. But we have to remember that we're talking about sex between HIV positive men. So if you're HIV negative, there's very low risk, if not no risk, of getting Hep C through sex.
Okay. And is there a specific reason as to why that would be there? Is it to do with the immune system, or is it to...
It does have to do with the immune system. So then it's got to do with the fact that there's already a compromised immune system in a person living with HIV, which means that also if you've got syphilis or gonorrhea or chlamydia, so the presence of another STI as well as HIV can mean that there's and you're exposed to a Hep C, there's a greater risk that it'll be transmitted. The interesting thing, though, about Hep C is that it's really easily destroyed. So it lasts a long time outside of the body, but just some warm, soapy water, and that will kill the virus. So, you know, if you're fisting, you wash your hands. If you're sharing toys, you make sure that you clean them. But, you know, one toy, one boy.
Not with the same bucket of water.
Well, no, you'd be wanting to... Hot running water.
No, that's a very interesting point, because in one particular sex party that I was helping to set up the equipment for, including condoms and gloves and stuff, they did provide buckets of water, hot soapy water, but they were buckets that people were going to share. And that was when I said, look, everybody should have their own bucket. And, you know, perhaps if you dispense with the buckets and actually go over to the sink and use hot water, or, you know, warm water, hot water, and lots of soap, because there was a soap dispenser. And it was just a very simple thing. They knew they had to clean their hands between, but it didn't naturally click into their heads that, oh, well, we can't all share the same bucket.
Yeah, and it's the same, like, you don't share douches. Like, that's another way you could easily pick it up. So, you know, Bring your own douche to your party, I think, is the rule.
BYOD. So I guess, do either of you know how many people in Australia are living with Hep C versus HIV, or how many people are actually living with co-infection?
We must have statistics on co-infection that I couldn't
I do have
find.
Stats.
Do you have? Yay!
So there are approximately 230,000 people across Australia living with Hep C. In Victoria, there are about 500 individuals living with both HIV and Hep C.
Okay. And obviously, Hep C has been sort of stigmatised in terms of the injecting drug use community and whatnot. Needle and syringe programs have gone a long way in terms of, I guess, HIV and Hep C sort of prevention. But what is the stigma like of living with hepatitis C versus HIV or living with co-infection?
I think it's greater. You know, there's... Particularly because a lot of people living with Hep C did pick it up from drug use, there's like that double stigma. So people already stigmatise them because maybe because of the particular drug they use, which, you know, heroin or meth or something like that. And then the fact that they inject it, that's another stigma. And then the fact that they've got Hep C, then that's another level of stigma. And if you've got HIV, then that's another level of stigma. And if you're gay, that's another level of stigma. Like, there's multiple layers of stigma. And it's just, you know, like, I suffered a lot of discrimination from other people living with HIV who were like, oh, no, we don't want to have unprotected sex with you, or no, we don't even want to have sex with you because we're too scared about Hep C. And I think it was based on fear. It was just because people didn't have enough education around it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at least in my personal experience, hepatitis C was never a concern of mine because I didn't actually know it was sexually transmitted, except in a very small proportion of cases. So I assumed, oh, doesn't matter, you know, we can... It doesn't matter. I'm fine. I'm not injecting drugs. We're not sharing needles, anything like that. Mm. And I've actually had the opposite experience where I feel like in the gay community, at least, people are less concerned about hepatitis and more concerned about HIV because HIV has been this big boogeyman for so long. And I don't know. They just don't seem to have that knowledge or awareness or the stigma. Some people, I shouldn't say all, but some people don't have that stigma attached to hepatitis. So I feel like it can go both ways, just what people know and what they've experienced.
I think there's a lot of people out there who might be living with Hep C who are just really quiet about it. Mm. I mean, it's, you know, they're scared of getting shunned or, you know, rejected by their community. And so they don't, you know, they keep it close to their chest. They don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And it's also a thing, once you've disclosed, you can't undisclose. So what that person's going to do with the information, especially around Hep C, you don't know. So as you said, if people are really uninformed and just have myths and sort of stigma and stereotypes around people with hepatitis C, then it can be one of those things you go, I actually want to keep that really close to my chest.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. After these wonderful messages and another track, this time by the Veronicas, we have some more questions, including a little bit about John's recent trip to South Africa and a new study in Hep C that Joel will be sharing some information about.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, and that was In My Blood by the Veronicas. And here on Joy 94.9, we're chatting tonight with Joel and John about hepatitis C and HIV and a forthcoming forum. If you've just tuned in, you've missed the earlier discussion. Well, people, have you missed a discussion? Remember, in a few days' time, there's going to be a podcast of this show on the Joy website. And you can look at those podcasts for this show and all of the previous shows that we've done. And they're put together by our wonderful podcaster, David. So thanks, David. Chookers to you, darling. Now, we have a question for both of you, which either of you or both of you may like to answer. The Australian government has been very happy to commit funding for HIV and more recently for the successful Hep C treatment that, Joel, you talked about. Why do you think they're not so committed to funding for pre-exposure prophylaxis?
It's a tough question.
I'm going to be a cynic here and I'm going to say it comes down to one thing, and it's money. Which is a fair consideration when you're talking about a very generous public health system. But we think about the treatments before. So the one that Joel mentioned before, the interferon, and the drug whose name I can't pronounce.
Ribavirin.
Thank you. It's expensive treatment as well. Like, these new treatments are $90,000 for an 8 to 12 week course of medication. It's a lot of money. the price of the interferon to the government is about half that, but it has a 50% success rate, whereas this one has about a 90% success rate, the new ones. But if you think about, okay, we pay $90,000 once this person is ideally treated, cured, and we never have to worry about again. $66,000, is that what they negotiated? I couldn't find that anywhere. You're a wizard. Regardless, it's so it's that and it's taken care of. If you had this other treatment before, you know, you have tens of thousands of dollars spent on this treatment. It maybe failed. You might have to go again for a second course of it. If it did fail, you're living with something that's going to potentially give you liver cancer, other cancers, a whole host of other health issues. Basically, you would cost a lot more money in the long run on these bad treatments than you would on these really good treatments. So that's why they said, all right, $1 billion over 5 years, let's just cure everybody in the country and be done with it. Now with PrEP, bit of a different story. So instead of 230,000 people who are hepatitis C positive, you have an unknown number of people who are maybe at risk of HIV. You have a treatment that they're not really willing to negotiate the drug price on for whatever reason. So basically you're looking about $10,000 a year, and for Lord knows how long, for you don't know how many people, really not sure how many infections it will prevent. There's something that says, all right, for every 13 people on PrEP, that's one infection prevented. That's a guess, and it's a really guess, and that's using the U.S. healthcare system as a model. Nobody quite knows what it would be down here. So it's also preventative, not treating. So it's kind of saying, well, you have these other prevention measures there. You know, we have condoms. We have treatment as prevention that we now know is bloody remarkable in that, you know, nobody, if you are on treatment, you are undetectable, you cannot transmit HIV, full stop. So you've got all that, and you say, well, you can maybe use that. We'll see how it goes with PrEP, blah, blah, blah. So there's hope. We'll find out this Friday, supposedly, what is said about that. And yeah, I think
I've got a little bit more. Like, I mean, $1 billion is only going to treat 15,000 people. But the thing is that the government negotiated this excellent deal with the drug company. So the government will put in the first $1 billion, and then the drug company, for every other person after that $1 billion is reached, they'll give the drugs to Australia for free. So it's a really, this is why I'm doing this advocacy work, is I'm trying to get people, encourage people to get on the treatment. And if you're living with HIV and Hep C, it's really important to get on the treatment, because the, you know, the Hep C advances much quicker rate when you've got HIV. And if we can get as many people as treated as possible, then we might be able to eliminate Hep C from the gay community.
And so, you know, like, just in terms of the study into Hep C care and treatment called the CO-EC study, I assume that's another acronym for something.
It's meant to be CO-EZ, like
EC. Oh, EC.
So, EC. And the CO is like co-infection.
Okay,
it's meant to be easy to treat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bless.
So, in a summation, kind of what was the research and what did we actually discover?
Okay, so it's they're currently recruiting the research. It's the Berner Institute, Alfred Health, who are trying to enlist as many people who are living with HIV and Hep C through six care sites. So we've got the high caseload clinics at Northside, we've got the Prayer Market Clinic, Centre Clinic in St Kilda, and also the Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. We've also got the Alfred Health Hospital and St Vincent's. So if you're a person living with HIV and Hep C and you go in to those six clinics to get treated, then you sort of automatically get enrolled anonymously into this, and it's just data collection. But the thing is, they know that out of the 500 people who are living with HIV and Hep C in Victoria, around 300 of those are already clients or customers of these clinics. So we can treat a good majority of the people. There is a website to go to if you want to get more information, and that is coecstudy.org.au.
I don't actually know.
Well, you can contact VAC, or you can contact Living Positive Victoria to get more information about the study and to be involved in the study, I guess.
Victoria as well.
Or Hepatitis Victoria. Or Hepatitis Victoria.
Or Harm Reduction Victoria.
Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and you're with Adam and Tessie Marie, and we are chatting with Joel Murray and John Mainwaring about Hep C and HIV and the forthcoming forum. Now, we've been alluding to the forum all night, gentlemen, so tell the listener a little bit about the HIV and Hep C co-infection forum, and what are we calling it, because it's not called the HIV and Hep C co-infection forum.
We're calling it something so clever, so terribly clever. We're calling it 2-in-1, managing HIV and hepatitis C co-infection.
I see what you did there.
IDK, right? no, it's actually quite, we're looking forward to it, because obviously, like, a lot of people just don't have a lot of information about this, and this is including people living with HIV and hepatitis C and people who are at risk of either or both of those. So we're just trying to give them an opportunity to talk to some people who know a lot about it, a lot about all of it, get some questions answered, understand the experience of it. So it's being held the 24th of August.
Is it August?
Yes, it's next week. Next Wednesday.
September, I'm sure.
I might have done. No, I didn't. I said August, and that's that. Tessie Marie.
Well, we've got the right date in now, but I guess who's actually going to be there to talk about the topic? Because as you said, if there's a lot of people that are not aware about co-infection, even living with co-infection, or not being able to share their story, and or people that just want to get informed, who are the people you go and hear from? Like, who do you need to hear from to get informed?
Well, the beautiful and intelligent and impressive Mr. Joel Murray, who is part of the speakers bureaus of both Hepatitis Victoria and Living Positive Victoria, will be there talking about... There you go. Talking about his experience a little more extended that night than he did tonight, but similar topic, so you can find out what the treatments are like. Melanie Eagle, who is the CEO of Hepatitis Victoria and formidable intellect on the topic of hepatitis. Brent Allen from Living Positive Victoria, who, again, just a wizard, I believe also has lived with hepatitis C himself, so he can share some of that. And then Dr. Joe Sazaduz, which I dearly hope I pronounced his name correctly.
He's my doctor.
Well, he will be there talking now from Royal Melbourne Hospital. He is one of the heads of many studies. I believe he's even involved in the CoEC study. And he'll be talking about all the medical aspects of it. And it'll be really, hopefully, really wonderful. There will be nibbles provided.
And look, let's be frank, who doesn't like 2-in-1?
Please.
Yeah.
Now listen, both of you, is there a cost involved for people attending?
Absolutely not. This is free to the community. We want to reach as many people as possible, and we want everybody to know that they are welcome, that there is no question too stupid, embarrassing, painful. We want people to come and ask these questions. It's going to be very informal, so even though we have this quite impressive panel, it's just going to be a conversation. Mm-hmm. We want people to be able to ask
questions.
Except
the hair hole, hairs and hyenas. Yes. So, I mean,
that should be good.
Very comfortable venue.
Yes.
So, who is the target audience? You said the community, but is it people that are living with HIV that are at risk of Hep C, or people with Hep C that potentially are at risk of HIV, or people with co-infection, people that work with people who have co-infection, or, as you're about to say, all of the above and more?
I'm not going to say all of the above. It's primarily for people who are already living with both HIV and hepatitis C virus. Sorry, I use the HCV abbreviation because that is much easier for me sometimes. Anyway, so it's primarily for them. But if you are a person living with HIV and maybe an injection drug user, or participate in sexually adventurous practices, by all means come. If you have hepatitis C and you feel you're at risk of HIV, by all means come. If you don't have either, but you are curious about the topic and you want to know more about it, come. If you know somebody who has either or both, come. Just we want everybody to know more about this and to understand as much as they can and dispel with the stigma.
And do people need to RSVP, or do they just turn up?
Just turn up. It's 6:30 p.m., like Joel said, hair hole at 63 Johnston Street in Fitzroy.
Well done. Yep.
Yeah. It'll only go for about an hour and a half, but I'm sure there'll be time to ask whatever question you might have. There'll be information on the VAC website, as well as some little blasts on the VAC Facebook page, and hopefully I've put a little ask out to the other organizations involved, and hopefully they'll be sharing the information as well.
Well, fantastic. Joel and John, it's been really fantastic to hear from you tonight and have you here in the studio talking about HIV and hepatitis C and co-infection, and about the forum, which is happening on what date in August?
Wednesday, the 24th of August, in the year of our Lord, 2016.
At 6:30 p.m. at the Hare Holland. That's Hares and Hyenas, yes. Bookshop, 63 Johnson Street.
That's the one.
Fantastic bookshop at the best of times anyway. And a great supporter of Joy and the VAC. This is Well, 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 and you are listening to Adam and Tex on Joy 94.9.
Well, well, well.
Well, 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 bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy, joy, joy.
Indeed it is. Well, 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 here on Joy 94.9. And goodness, Adam, would you believe it that the hour is almost up? I mean, we have a bit of time. We have another song coming up, of course. But, oh, it's a lovely song as well. But, yeah, we're nearly done with the show tonight.
I know.
Really interesting
it's
show, though.
It's been really sort of interesting to sort of, I guess, find out more about co-infection and sort of what's going on and mm-hmm. sort of what the community dialogue is and kind of why we actually need to have a forum like this. Because as you said, it's something, or as the guests have said, it's not something that is discussed, and sometimes it can be additionally stigmatizing. I'm not quite sure how many layers of stigma there were there, but there was quite a few. So understandably so, this forum is just a really great step forward. And obviously it looks like it's going to be really, really informal, but really informative.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great combination, I think, when you want to go to a forum outside of working hours to become informed.
Indeed.
Now, say that 10 times fast, Adam. No, I don't think so. Drops pen, drops mic, out. Woo!
Thank you, Adam. Now, coming up on next week's show, I know that on the show they're going to be mentioning a new documentary which is coming up very soon. It's going to be released in the Maidscreen cinemas. It's called The Queen of Ireland. And look, it's an interesting film. I've watched on YouTube the actual short of it, and mm-hmm. it's a really funny short, but it's quite a poignant film as well. And it's unlike any other film in recent Irish history. It's the effects of the marriage referendum. And how those effects affected the Irish society. Now, it's only been in for about a year or so, I think, in Ireland. But it looks at how such an event, like a referendum, which has far-reaching effects, how it affects young people, old people, gay, straight, rich, poor, etc. And it features a really important artist, a really funny artist, Panty Bliss, who's actually been here on Joy, interviewed here on Joy, who has an alter ego, Rory O'Neill, and it looks at his career and his life as the drag act, Panty Bliss. And he was brought up in, one could say, county or country Ireland.
It's county.
County. All right.
County Mayo. Ballinrobe.
Thanks.
Okay, that's what we'd be talking about. Both my parents are from Belfast, so I think this is actually going to be a really interesting sort of testament, especially because, you know, everybody looks at Ireland or they look at Belfast and sort of think about the fact that it's, you know, probably had the longest civil war in sort of a Western civilization for mm-hmm. quite a long time, and it's extremely religious. So the fact that marriage equality got through there was fantastic, and I think this documentary is going to speak to the fact that, as you said, that Rory comes from sort of an out-of-the-way place.
Yep.
And sort of looking at the experience of being a closeted teenager in a country sort of small town, and sort of immigrating overseas and sort of finding himself before returning, going back. So I think it's going to be one of those journey that traverses a range of different topics that at least everyone will be able to relate to in one way or another.
Indeed. And look, it's a bit like, you know, here in Australia, especially in Victoria, homosexuality was decriminalised in the 70s, but in the 80s and early 90s, it was still illegal to be a homosexual in Ireland, and it was criminalised, so people could go to prison. And so it's going to be quite interesting to see his life journey. So, you know, the Queen of Ireland isn't just a film, it's a document that chronicles the changing face of Ireland. And it looks at how the marriage referendum worked, how grassroots activism of people going out and talking, ordinary people who happen to be gay and lesbian, talking to their parents, their families, their relations, people who lived in their street, and showed them that really gay and lesbian people are essentially like anyone else. So it'll be a really interesting...
No, we're not. We're better.
Well, yeah, we're better, darling, but we are really like anyone else.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Now, Adam, we've almost the end of the show. If anyone's missed any part of the show, look out for the podcast. As we mentioned earlier, it's on the Joy website, joy.org.au. You can go to joy.org.au/well. We need to thank David, our podcaster. And coming up next, of course, is the lovely Sonia with Broad. Take care of yourself, people. This has been Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Tune in next week for more.
Absolutely. It's been a delight, Tessie.
It has, Adam. Cheers, everyone, and good night.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.